This is your life, episode number 4.
This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life.
Hello and welcome to another episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. Today, we're going to be talking about one of my very favorite subjects. We're going to be talking about thinking bigger. And specifically, I want to share with you a 7-step formula that I've developed just by observing my own behavior over the years and accomplishing goals. But I've dealt with a lot of successful people. As a publisher, I've had the privilege of working with a lot of best-selling authors, many of whom are successful in their own fields of endeavor. But I've been fascinated by the mindset that differentiates the successful ones from the unsuccessful. And I can tell you this as an absolute fact. It's not about education. It's not about experience. It's not even about talent. It has to do with psychology. People that are successful think differently than people who are not successful. They have a different mindset that they come to life with and come to goal setting and goal planning with. It's all about their mental framework, and it's that I want to explore in this session today. It's really 80%, I think, psychology, and 20% all that other stuff, the education and the experience and the talent. And I'm not saying that's not important. What I am saying is that's not the determining factor, and it's not enough to succeed. Well, here's the problem when it comes to thinking bigger. When we're young, our parents and our teachers tell us we can do anything, right? They tell us we could be an astronaut if we want, or an Olympic athlete, a ballet dancer, an artist, a speaker, a television host. I mean, the sky's the limit. No problems. But then as we get older, these same people begin telling us that we have to be more, and this is the word I hate, realistic. Realistic. One of my blog readers shared a really cool quote from the actor Will Smith, who said this about realism, quote, "Being realistic is the most common path to mediocrity," end quote. Isn't that awesome? I totally agree with Will Smith. In fact, Will goes on to say, "Why would you be realistic? What's the point of being realistic? It just seems like such a ridiculous idea to me to embrace this idea that it's not going to happen or that's not real." The moment you decide to be realistic, you can pretty much guarantee that voice will dominate and it won't happen, end quote. He's so right on. That's really the mindset that I had until I read a book by David Schwartz called The Magic of Thinking Big. And there's a link in the show notes to it if you want to go there. But it was originally published in 1959. I read it in the mid-1980s, but it forever changed the way I think about my work and my life. And I would urge you to get a copy of that book and read it for yourself. But since that time, I've become convinced that thinking big is not a gift at all. It's not like some people are born with it and some people aren't born with it. Now, for sure, some people are better at it and some people are not so good at it, but it's a skill, not a gift. And if it's a skill, it's one that can be learned. It's one that you and I can develop. But we got to understand the process, the technology, if you will, and then consistently begin to apply it. So let me lay out these 7 steps for you. 7 steps to thinking big and achieving what you really dream about. Number one, imagine the possibilities. You've got to give yourself permission to dream. Nobody else is going to do this. You've got to give yourself permission to dream, to push the envelope, to expand the horizons, to think bigger than you've ever thought before. I remember when I was publishing my very first book, I had been rejected by 29 publishers, and finally the 30th publisher said yes, and I was overjoyed for about a nanosecond. And then I realized, holy smoke, now I've got to write this book, and I've got to turn it in by the deadline, and I've got to keep my full-time job in the midst of this. And so it seemed like an enormous amount of work. But occasionally, I would catch myself daydreaming as I was writing this book about what it would be like to be a best-selling author. Could I become a best-selling author? Could I go for the bestsellers list? Dare I write that down as a goal? And I did. I mean, I kind of looked around to see if anybody was looking, and then I wrote it down on a sheet of paper to become a New York Times best-selling author. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. Now I'm not trying to say to you, if you just write it down, that's all you need to do. And I'm not trying to say just because you can imagine the possibility that it's going to happen, but I'm saying that's where it starts. It's not going to happen until you imagine the possibility, and you've got to give yourself the freedom to do this. By the way, One little tool that I stumbled upon recently is a social media tool. It's really a phenomenon now called Pinterest. Maybe you're familiar with it. A lot of people use this to collect ideas for a wedding or recipes or decorating a room, but it allows you to grab a graphic image off a web page that you're looking at and pin it to a virtual bulletin board on the Pinterest site. And it's very simple to use. You install this bookmarklet in your browser, and then in any site you're browsing, you see image, you go, oh, I like that. I'm gonna pin it to a bulletin board. Well, what does that have to do with thinking bigger? It allows you to create a dream board for every goal that you have and to begin to associate images that make that goal more real and more concrete for you. And I've just begun using it for that purpose. And so far, I'm loving it. I think it's gonna be a fantastic tool for thinking bigger. And I've got a link in the show notes to Pinterest so you could get directly there. So number one, imagine the possibilities. Number two, and this is so critically important, write down your dream. This is the act that transforms a dream into a goal. And amazing things begin to happen when you commit something to writing. And I don't fully understand how this works, but I've experienced it firsthand again and again. For example, after my daughter Mindy was married, she and her husband went off on their honeymoon. I took Gail, my wife, and my other four daughters and a friend to a beach vacation in Florida. And I decided that during this beach vacation, we were going to learn how to dream a little bit. So I gave them each a copy of a book by Henriette Clouser called Write It Down, Make It Happen. A great, wonderful book. But her premise is that something is set in motion when you write something down. Once you state your intention, you begin moving towards it. Now, you know, a lot of people get into this in kind of a woo-woo sort of, I don't know, metaphysical way. And I'm not really talking about that. I'm really just talking about that when you write it down, you're really saying something to yourself. You're being courageous. It's the first act of courage of saying, I'm going after this. So write down your dream. This is where it begins. On this vacation, I gave everybody a legal pad. And I said, okay, here's the goal. I want you to write down 100 things that you want to accomplish before you die. Think big, think crazy, do whatever you want, but come up with 100 ideas of things that you want to accomplish before you die. Now, today we'd call that a bucket list, but this was before the movie came out, so I didn't know that term. So all we were doing was creating really a goal list or a dream list. And so everybody wrote that list, and the first 10 or 20 were easy. I mean, everybody could write those down, but then we really had to think. We had to pray. We had to really think about what could be possible. But I just recently reviewed that list, and it was amazing to me how many of those things have come to pass. This was about 10 years ago that we did this, but how many of those things have come to pass? It was extraordinary, but it began when we wrote down our dreams. So that's the second step. The third step is to connect with what is at stake. Connect with what is at stake. This is your rationale. Unfortunately, it's a crucial step that people often forget. And frankly, it's one that I didn't use for years. I just didn't think about it. But it's really important, especially when you encounter setbacks. Before you can find your way, you've got to discover your why. And you just got to ask yourself, why is this goal important to you? Jot it down in a series of bullets. Why is this goal important to you? What will achieving it make possible? What is at stake if you don't accomplish it? What will you lose? Your rationale provides the intellectual and the emotional power to keep going when the path becomes difficult, which it will. Now, when I was publishing that very first book, I was reviewing my goals daily, and I started encountering some setbacks. And if I hadn't had my rationale written down, I really think I would have given up. Because for starters, the publisher, after he had agreed to publish the book and given me a contract and paid me in advance, and I'd written the book and I'd had it edited and it was ready to go to the printer, the publisher called me and said, look, nobody wants this book. It ain't gonna happen. We're gonna have to cancel the publication. He was actually nicer than that. But I summoned all the salesmanship I could because I knew what was at stake. I already had my reputation out there. I told people the book was coming. I had a huge amount invested, and I really believed that it would help people. So I talked the publisher into publishing a small print run. I think it was like 2,500 copies, but he did it. Well, then I had another setback because the publicist said that she couldn't get any media. Nobody wanted to talk about this book, and therefore there was no way to sell the book. And then lo and behold, the book began to sell and just off the shelf, and the media got interested, and then they booked me like crazy. I think I did 1,200 interviews in the first year after publication. But I wouldn't have made it through those setbacks if I didn't understand in my gut what was at stake. And that kept me going when the things became difficult. So number three is connect with what is at stake. Number four, outline what would have to be true. This is something I didn't used to do either, but this is a critical step in the process. Rather than merely asking, how do you get from where you are to where you want to go, which would be strategy, the how, I like asking what would have to be true for my dream to become a reality. For example, when I set a goal of hitting the bestsellers list, I realized that first and foremost, I had to write a compelling book. The product had to be excellent. There had to be wow built in because I had to create a product that people wanted to share with other people. I mean, that's really the secret of success with any product or service or cause is word of mouth. And the only reason that word of mouth happens is because people get wowed. They have an experience with something and they want to talk about it to their friends and family. And in this age, people really resist advertising. What they really want is the recommendation of a friend. And that's what all of us are using now to determine our purchasing decisions or the causes that we support or the services that we employ. So you've got to outline what's going to be true. And for me, I knew I had to write a compelling book. What else did I know had to be true? I knew I had to be its chief spokesperson, that if I didn't champion this project, nobody else was going to do it. So that was just something else that had to be true. Another thing that was have to be true is that I was going to have to get media exposure. And I didn't know how it was going to happen. In fact, it looked pretty daunting at the time because the media was saying no initially. But I knew that was going to have to be true in order for me to accomplish the dream that I had written down. So you've got to outline what has to be true. Number five. Decide what you can do to affect the outcome. Now, look, I know that not everything's under your control, that sometimes the best you can hope for is influence, but you've got a lot more control than what you think. And this is where you transition from the big picture to the daily actions. And this is where people often get derailed. Maybe they can think big, maybe they can write down the goal, but when it comes to execution, somehow they get off the track. So rather than doing something, they do nothing. And here's the problem. You're never going to see the full path. Don't get hung up on that. I never plan something from A to Z. I just plan the next steps. Take those steps in faith, believing that what I need will appear when I need it, that the action I need to take will be clear when I need to take it. I think this, frankly, is the whole faith walk. You have a dream, you have a goal, you've written it down, you identify the next steps, and you begin to move out in faith. Number six, determine when this will happen. Someone once said that a goal is simply a dream with a deadline, and I think that's exactly right. A deadline is one way to make the dream more concrete, which is exactly what thinking big is about. Thinking big also involves deadlines. It's not just, you know, dreaming and hoping, but it's actually committing yourself to a deadline, and that creates a sense of urgency that will motivate you to take action. So force yourself to assign what I call a by when date, and that's actually a column that I have on my action plans, by when. When am I going to see this accomplished? But it's a date, assign a date to every goal. And if you get stuck, just ask yourself the question, what's the worst that can happen? Now, I hesitate whenever I write a date by a goal because I think of all the things that could throw me off track and keep me from accomplishing it by that date. But at some point, you have to commit. And again, what's the worst that can happen? Initially, I had the goal of getting this podcast rolling by February the 1st. Well, I didn't, and I had to change the date so that the new by when date became February the 14th. There was just more to accomplish than I anticipated, but that's okay. You can move the date, but commit to a date and commit to it in writing. Number seven, review your goals daily. I again go back to when I was writing my first book, and I had specific goals about the book that I reviewed every single day. And I've got a list of 10 goals for this year, for 2012, that I'm reviewing every single day. And the reason I want to do this is because I want to laser focus on the dream. I want to laser focus on the goal. I want to make it possible and I want to accomplish it. So I focus on what I need to do today to move myself toward that goal. And that's the value of reviewing your goals daily, is it will stimulate your thinking and it will bring things to mind that you need to accomplish in order to move yourself down the road towards accomplishing your goal. So don't listen to that mocking little voice that tells you to be more realistic. Ignore it. You can either accept reality as it is, or you can create it as you wish it to be. This is the essence of dreaming and thinking big. So I hope these seven steps will be of help to you. I did have some questions that came in about thinking big, and I wanted to address those. Jim wrote in and he said this. He said, so I want to dream big, but I'm not getting much support from my friends. They laugh and make fun of me. And as much as I wish this didn't bother me, it does. What should I do? Thank you, Michael, for all you do. Well, number one, I would be very careful with whom I share my dreams. I don't share them anymore just willy-nilly. I don't go public with them. I used to, but I don't anymore. But I think of Joseph in the Bible when he shared his dream with his brothers. That didn't really help him. He ended up in jail in Egypt as a result of that. So I don't think sharing your dreams is probably the best course of action just with everybody. I would only share them with people who are trusted mentors or people who are part of my intimate circle, my team, because they're going to be probably enrolled or involved in helping me accomplish that dream and they need to know. But I only share it on a need-to-know basis. Dreams are fragile things, especially at the beginning. And you don't want to burst the bubble. You don't want to prematurely derail the dream. So be careful who you share it with. The second thing I would say is create a peer group of like-minded people. Create a peer group of like-minded people. You know, so often the friends that we have pull us down. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have them as friends, and they probably have a role in our lives, but we've got to be very intentional. If we want to succeed, if we want to grow, if we want to accomplish our dreams, we've got to be very successful in assembling what I call in my book platform, a pit crew, but people that help us get onto the racetrack and keep us onto the racetrack. People that share our values, have similar goals, are committed to the same kinds of things that we're committed to. So be intentional about creating a peer group and ask yourself the question, can I afford to hang around this person if they're going to always be naysaying or throwing water on my dreams? You know, is it really worth it? Are they really friends at all? My definition of a true friend is somebody that's rooting for me, somebody that I'm supporting as well, and where we have that kind of mutual relationship, that mutual support. Chrissy wrote in to ask, I don't want to be one of those parents who nag my kids to be realistic. How do I encourage them to dream big? Well, I would say this, Chrissy, you've got to model it first. That's, you know, the bottom line. I think replication is a fact of leadership. Who we are translates much more readily than what we say. And therefore, our lives are critical, the kinds of lives that we live, including this whole area of thinking big. If you want your kids to pick that up, it's going to be caught more than taught, and you've got to be a big thinker yourself. Second thing I would say is draw it out from your kids. These are wonderful dinnertime conversations to ask them what they're dreaming about, or to say, well, what would be the best case scenario? Or if you could have your cake and eat it too, what would it look like? What would really happen if your dreams came true? And so to just pull that out of them and to elicit that inner dreamer that's inside of every kid. Third thing I would say is encourage them to go for it. And a lot of parents are reluctant to do that because they're trying to protect their children from disappointment or discouragement. I don't think that's helpful because that's not how the real world works. And you want to get them in the habit of taking reasonable risks and just getting out there and going for it. And so I would say encourage them to go for it. And this brings me to the next point, which I would say give them the freedom to fail. You know, failure's never final unless you quit. Failure's never final unless you quit. And I try to teach my kids that. I've tried to teach my kids that. I want to teach my grandkids that as well. Is if you fail, dust yourself off, own your responsibility in it, learn from it, and press on. And that brings me to the last point, is I would say always debrief. Whether it's a success or it's a failure, debrief and distill the wisdom out of the experience so that you've got it for the next goal that you're going to take on. This is critically important. It's the essence of wisdom, but so many of us in our rush to get to the next thing don't take time to adequately process what we've just gone through and glean from it the learnings that we can learn. Barry wrote in and asked, when does thinking big become delusional? When does thinking big become delusional? Well, honestly, it's a fine line. I mean, you know, if I were to think that I'm going to go on the senior tour as a professional golfer, That probably ain't going to happen. That's probably delusional. Maybe, you know, I could accomplish it if I could really dedicate myself to that and put in my 10,000 hours, assuming I had a modicum of talent with golf, which I don't. But that's pretty delusional. So I do think we have to be careful. And I would say this, find a mentor. Someone that you can trust. It doesn't have to be a formal mentoring relationship, but somebody that's maybe a little further on the path, a little wiser, who is out for your best interests, who is committed for you becoming all that you can be, and ask them. Lay your dream out and ask them. Get their honest input and ask them if you're crazy or if this is really something you need to be pursuing. And I think one of the things also just that we can ask ourselves is this dream all about me? If it is, and if it's about fame, and if it's about glory, and if it's about us, then I think we're on shaky ground. And borderline, we can get into borderline delusional thinking about that. So make sure it's about other people, that there's a transcendent purpose. And this also goes back to what's at stake. This will keep you going when the going gets tough. So I hope this has been helpful to you. That's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please, please subscribe to it at michaelhyatt.com. This Is Your Life, all one word, michaelhyatt.com. This Is Your Life. That way you won't miss a single episode. You can also find more resources on my blog at michaelhyatt.com. And if you're interested in having me come speak to your organization, check out my speaking page at michaelhyatt.com/speaking. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.
This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. Are you who you want to be?